Morning. The next case set for argument this morning is Epic Outdoor Advertising versus City of Rapid City and Lamar Advertising, appeal number 30414. Before I note the appearances by counsel, I would note that Justice Kern has disqualified herself on this case, and Judge Christina Klinger from the Sixth Circuit is sitting with us, and we appreciate her sitting with the court this morning. Appearances in the case, Michael Sabers appears on behalf of the appellant, Epic Outdoor Advertising. Tara Larson will be arguing on behalf of the City of Rapid City. And then we have Edward Carpenter, who's arguing on behalf of Lamar Advertising. I understand, Ms. Larson and Mr. Carpenter, you've split your time up. So Ms. Larson will have 10 minutes and Mr. Carpenter will have 5 minutes. Who's going to go first?
I will.
Okay. All right. And so then, Mr. Sabers, you'll have 15 minutes for your initial argument and then a five-minute rebuttal. You can proceed.
Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court, sitting Justice Klinger, counsel, clerks, I know that being a month away from being 50 years old and maybe having appeared before this court six or seven times now, that there will come a day when I sleep the night before an oral argument, but I can represent to the court that last night was not that night. So I do very much enjoy having the opportunity to come to these chambers and to represent my client, who in this case is Epic Outdoor Advertising. This case has an interesting history, and I'll try to be brief, but I think it's important for the history to be known. The City of Rapid City in 2002 enacted an ordinance, number 3813, that was lengthy, to be kind. It spawned litigation, and it spawned a lot of litigation, and that litigation continues today. That litigation commenced when Lamar, who is an intervener in this case, sued the city based upon the size, spacing, many of the requirements. And that litigation was actually brought in federal district court. That was tried to the federal district court and ultimately settled. That was the first piece of litigation that was spawned by this ordinance. The second piece of litigation, which this court is familiar with because it resulted in an appeal to this court back in 2020, and this court issued a decision, was an Epic lawsuit against the City of Rapid City regarding the application of some of these ordinances. Ultimately, that case was settled by the City of Rapid City and Epic, and then Lamar brought an action challenging the legitimacy of such a settlement, ultimately culminating in this court's decision in 2020. That brings us here. Why is that important? Because in the appellee's brief and at the trial court, my client got peppered a little bit with the fact that this case before you was originated in 2012. I can tell you that litigation has been active on many aspects of these ordinances since really they were enacted in 2002, and certainly since this case in 2012. Importantly, there was never a motion to dismiss filed. There were multiple hearings. There were at least two different trial judges assigned to this during its tenure, all bringing us to today. The issue today has been narrowed considerably. A review of the oral argument shows that the issue really before this court, really is the issue of what is a currency called sign credits. So I'm going to start by acknowledging what I know the court is going to ask anyway. Isn't a municipality provided deference to enact ordinances? And the answer is yes. But this court has also given guidance, and what I think it's fair to say is maybe a sliding scale of deference to municipalities. The more the legislature has stepped in with a statute and said this is what you need to consider, then the municipalities have less discretion, and they must, as this court stated in City of Marion versus Schoenwald, the municipality must stay within the statutory ambit that the legislature has provided. My client is not taking the position that the field upon which the municipality may enact ordinances isn't broad and it's not wide. But it must be the field that the legislature gave it. So, not oversimplifying things, the trial court cited this court's decision in City of Marion versus Schoenwald. That was a 2001 decision authored by Justice Konenkamp, which I remember quite well because when I clerked for Judge Zinner the year before he became a justice, I was sitting right back here. My wife was clerking for Justice Konenkamp. Ron Parsons in the city of Marion's oral argument was, it was a dog case about the regulation of dogs. And I still remember it quite well because Justice Amundson made a comment that I will never forget from the bench during the oral argument. They were talking about the size of the dogs, and for some reason the size of a dog's excrement somehow became a topic of the court. The city of Marion's lawyer argued quite well that the size of the dog matters because it pertains directly to that. And Justice Amundson from Justice Salter's chair, I remember it, said, "I have a beagle for your study." And the entire courtroom joked. But why does that tie into this case? This ties into this case because it's the deference. In City of Schoenwald, which is this court's kind of instructions to the municipalities, it talks about the more the legislature steps in and gives the framework, the less discretion exists for the municipality.
Well, let me ask you this. So there's a number of findings that the city made in its ordinance. Are you saying that the findings themselves don't comply with the statute? Or are you saying there's not facts to support those findings support the action that the city took?
My answer is somewhat unique, and I think that there are 72 findings right. to support the ordinance.
So do you think those findings are inadequate in and of themselves?
I think the findings completely missed the playing field the legislature gave them. Because the legislature's strict instructions is found in the statute is 312969. The legislature told the city of Rapid City, and all municipalities for that matter, that any regulation of billboards shall be reasonably related to the needs of the business community to adequately and properly advertise its goods and services. In Schoenwald, this court said the statutes or the ordinances have to be tailored to the object being sought. That's actually the exact language from Schoenwald, they must be narrowly tailored to the object being sought. The city did not cite. It's important to look. They provide 72 reasons. They don't mention, they don't infer, and they don't reference the business community.
So is your argument that the 69 statute supplants what would otherwise be the police power reserved to municipalities?
I believe it curtails it within the framework of that statute itself.
Well, it would have to supplant. Well, I mean, I don't want to quarrel, but it would have to supplant it. Because if you say that none of these things matter, they entirely miss the playing field, it seems oriented to exercise the police power. And if your argument is that's missing entirely, the universe of what can be considered is contained in 312969, that does seem like you're saying don't worry about what you might otherwise think about in terms of health, welfare, safety. Think only about serving the business community and their needs to advertise their goods.
I think, and that goes back to the fact that this was a summary judgment proceeding. And I know that recently, Justice Salter, you issued a case on summary judgment. And you talked about the different standards for summary judgment versus trial. All of the cases that were cited, interestingly, to this court on municipal authority, I can't find one. There may be one, but I've read them all. And all of them were tried to the trial court and evidence was taken. The first time the city of Rapid City makes an argument that it even considered 312969 is on page 12 of its appellee brief.
So if that's the case, and if the distinction is that, you know, we really don't have that developed trial record, what, looking at Rule 56C, what is it that is either a disputed material fact or a point of law that would prohibit the entry and the entitlement of judgment as a law? We framed within that Rule 56 standard. Why is it error to have granted it here?
Thank you, Justice Salter. Because my client was the only one who submitted an affidavit as to the fact that the city never considered the appropriate standard provided by the legislature in 312969. The city of Rapid City did not submit one affidavit to the trial court in support of the motion for summary judgment. And, you know, the law is also quite settled that when you make an argument for the first time on appeal, again, at a summary judgment decision, again, without an affidavit like the city of Rapid City does, I mean, I believe, Justice Salter, that this court's purview of the case is this was summary judgment. There's no reference in the record that the city of Rapid City ever contemplated. When you give 72 reasons and you cite two or three statutes, but those aren't and those don't include 312969, well, and then you have 12 years to come about with a reason why you arguably did, and then the first time you do it is to this court on page 12. And I think, and again, I come back to summary judgment. Under 56C, the rules to resist it and the rules to support it are clear. It's a very dispositive process. If there is an issue of dispute, and my client believes he raised it through both affidavit and otherwise, then it should go to the trial court for a trial. I'd like to think, if this court does remand, I'd like to think that we would prevail in our case. We may or we may not. But the point is at some point, the city of Rapid City needs to come forward and explain how they actually took into account what the legislature said shall be accounted for in that statute. And I think if you look, I mean, I think on appeal the city was put in a difficult position because if you look at the oral argument, the argument that was made to the trial court on behalf of EPIC, and I made it, was, listen, I'm not saying the city didn't cover a lot of bases, but the legislature told them what home base was, and they forgot to cover home base. And so, you know, if you cite three statutes and then give 72 reasons, but none of those actually address the business community, because, again, in Schoenwald, this court said, to qualify as reasonable, because, again, I understand that there's deference given to municipalities, as does my client, to qualify as reasonable, such regulation must contribute in some real and substantial measure to the object being sought to be accomplished. What I would respectfully submit to this court is the object sought to be accomplished must contemplate the needs of the business community to adequately and properly advertise its goods and services. And when they had 72 chances to talk about it and they didn't, I think it's also fair to assume that they missed it.
Do you have an argument that implicates the first sentence of 312969? In other words, do you feel like this is a signed credit system affects a total and complete prohibition upon outdoor advertising?
Or? Yes, I do. In the appellant's brief, when we framed the issue for this court in our appellant's brief, the first issue that was brought to the court's review was whether or not they had the authority to do it at all, because it's a prohibition. The second one was, if it's not a prohibition, then did they follow the statutory ambit provided by this court in Schoenwald? So I think it's undisputed. I guess I've never seen it disputed at the trial court. If you don't own sign credits, Justice Salter, you can't enact a billboard in the city of Rapid City. And so what you've done is you've created, and this is laid out very much in detail in my client, Mr. Casey, the owner of Epic Outdoor Advertising. In his affidavit, he lays out, listen, I have a few, Lamar has a lot, and if you don't have any, this prohibits you from enacting a billboard. And I don't know, number one, they can't prohibit, because the statute clearly makes that clear. But I don't know how a prohibition would anyway be reasonably related to the needs of the business community. And so, you know, the city's position, again, it's on page 12 of their brief, is that there was, they said, the city's specific finding discussing, quote, current congestion of billboards within the city demonstrates that it did take into account 312969. But if you go, and it's, so the court's aware, if you go to the actual ordinance and you look on its appendix, page 42, and it's the third whereas down. So the city is relying, to say the city's argument made for the first time here on appeal, that they considered the business community and their advertising needs, is this paragraph. Whereas the city of Rapid City finds that the removal of existing off-premise signs will alleviate the current congestion and the replacement of non-conforming off-premise signs with conforming off-premise signs is desirable. Now, I'm glad my English teacher from growing up did not read that sentence for many reasons. But what I think it's clear, and I want to say it's almost a tacit admission on behalf of the city, that if you have 72 reasons given, and the best one you can try to claim ties into the statute that you're mandated to look at, if the best one is current congestion of signs, again, I think it's a tacit admission that they simply didn't cover home plate. To come back, I guess, to the last issue is, what we're asking, I believe that this court can simply reverse the trial court without changing the City of Marion versus Stonewalled case one bit. The City of Marion versus Stonewalled was very clear as to the legislature needs to be within its statutory ambit, and the regulations need to be real and substantial measures to the object sought. I don't think the city has proven it. Actually, I don't even think the city argued it before the trial court. And so a reversal would send this back to the trial court so that a trial could take place and so that the city could try to show that back in 2002, when these ordinances were enacted, that they were actually contemplating what the legislature told them they should contemplate. I see my time. I have 10 seconds left, so I appreciate the court's audience and the opportunity again to represent my client before this court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sabers. Ms. Larson, you can proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, Chief Justice, Justices, Counsel, what Epic is missing here is that the burden of proof is on Epic in this case to prove both the preemption aspect as well as the constitutional aspect, which didn't seem to be argued here. Additionally, I would like to point out that Mr. Sabers stated that not a single case that he found was decided on summary judgment with regard to the validity of an ordinance. The 40-year case, which is upfront and very apparent in our argument, was decided on summary judgment. It was decided based on findings of fact of the city, that there were two findings of fact, and the court found those to be reasonable. So that would be a misstatement of the law, in my opinion. Not only does Epic carry the burden, but it carries the burden of overcoming a presumption of validity and constitutionality. The city's basis for implementing the sign credit ordinance was the police power under 929.1, which permits a municipality to regulate for the benefit of the health, safety, and general welfare of its community. And the ordinance recited the same. Now, Epic is alleging that Chapter 3129 preempts the sign credit ordinance. Importantly, however, nothing in 3129 prevents the city from implementing a sign credit ordinance. In fact, it yields to municipalities to regulate as long as it doesn't prohibit. And I would actually, this was not in my brief, but I found it interesting. There is a case, City of Oneida versus Brandt, that talks about conflicting between statutes, and it states, conflicts arise between an ordinance and a statute only when their express or implied terms are irreconcilable, where the ordinance permits that which the statute prohibits, or the ordinance forbids that which the statute expressly permits. Now,
3929.69 would seem to apply. I mean, it's a statute that's we need to pay attention to, maybe for lack of a better term. But what about the argument that the city didn't focus properly upon the specific test there? That it be reasonable, and that it also be reasonably related to the needs of the business community to adequately advertise their products and services.
Mr. Justice, you actually read my mind, because that was the very next part of my argument.
Good.
Now, 3129.69 does specifically say that the statute shall be reasonable and reasonably related to the needs of the business community. It asserts that, Epic does, that the ordinance violates those provisions. However, it's important, and this is, you know, set forth by long-established case law, that ordinances are presumed to be reasonable. The court stated the same in the Lamar Outdoor Advertising versus City of Rapid City when it stated that, quote, the enactment of a municipal ordinance is a legislative act representing an legislative determination and judgment, and like all legislative enactments, a zoning ordinance is presumed to be reasonable, valid, and constitutional. To overcome the presumption here, Lamar, as the party attacking the ordinance, must show that the sign code is, quote unquote, both unreasonable and arbitrary. Here it is Epic's burden to demonstrate how the ordinance is unreasonable and not reasonably related to the needs of the business community.
So could the city have enacted this very same ordinance without a single finding or recital, and would that change what we're doing here in this case one bit?
No, it would not. It does not have to specifically...
There's no compulsory requirement that it justify through any number of recitals. Is that what your argument is?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, again, it is Epic's burden to bring forth evidence to demonstrate that it is, in fact, unreasonable and not necessarily fit for the business community.
So now, what's your view of Epic's affidavit? Mr. Sabers talked about an affidavit that was submitted. Does that overcome that presumption?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Mr. Casey's affidavit is devoid of any assertion that the ordinance is not reasonable or reasonably related to the business community. He does not assert that the number of billboards in Rapid City is inadequate for businesses to advertise to the traveling public. In fact, he notes that there are a bunch of on-premise signs, which is a pretty good indication that businesses have the ability to advertise to the traveling public. Instead, what Epic is attempting to do is to burden shift, which is impermissible. And frankly, the city's findings itself demonstrate that it was, in fact, taking a delicate balance of the public concerns and the very, very vocal public concerns over safety, aesthetics, and billboard congestion with the acknowledgement. Our findings did acknowledge that billboards were legal and could not be prohibited.
What about now, that prohibition? Forgive me for interrupting, but what about that, the argument that Epic makes that this, you know, affects a total prohibition, and that would contravene 312969. Does it?
No, Your Honor.
I keep thinking about the term, but it might not be right at all. But I keep wondering if it's like a moratorium.
No, Your Honor.
That might not be the right term either, but it seems like it captures a finite whatever group or a finite number of these credits, and they don't grow anymore over time. Am I right on that?
I think the word that you're looking for, Justice Salter, is a cap and replace program, which is done throughout the United States by numerous municipalities. That does not amount to a prohibition. In fact, I cited in my brief the Adams outdoor case in Michigan. Michigan has a very similar statute that interprets that you cannot do a blanket prohibition on outdoor advertising, but given the fact that the billboards in that Adams outdoor advertising case were allowed to be reconstructed, reused, re-advertised, that in itself, even without a cap and replace, was permissible under the law. Now,
so there might be a prohibition in this case. And I think Mr. Saber's point was it prohibits any company that doesn't have existing signs. So a new sign company is going to have a hard time coming into Rapid City and posting signs. That's not what the 69 statute is about, is it? It's about the ability of companies to advertise their goods and services, not about the sign companies. Am I right about that?
Correct, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, you hit the nail on the head. This is about businesses being able to advertise to the traveling public, not potential billboard companies entering into that. There is no...
So it potentially reduces the number, but it doesn't prohibit the number of those signs, or it doesn't prohibit completely those signs, correct?
Correct. In fact, it allows the erection of new billboards as well, as long as you...
Got to cash in some old ones.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. As long as those signs are in compliance with the size, spacing, et cetera, of the ordinance.
I keep interrupting, but am I right on thinking that, because I know it's within Chapter 3129, I should probably know the answer to this, but the 69 statute talks about outdoor advertising. That seems like a broader topic than off-premises signs. That seems like a subset of a larger group. And so the prohibition is arguably dealing with a much bigger topic of outdoor advertising. Is that right?
Justice, I would love to agree with you, but unfortunately, definition in 3129 of outdoor advertising is an off-premises sign.
Okay.
So, going back, however, I think it's important to note that Mr. Casey, in his affidavit, which is, again, this is his burden, amounts to nothing more than a denial and averment, right? He goes, I believe this to be arbitrary. I believe this to be capricious. I believe this to be unreasonable. He doesn't present any actual evidence putting that forward. Now, if Epic believed that an ordinance was unreasonable and arbitrary, it would present evidence showing the same. It would present those city council minutes. It would present all of the things that he claims there was no recollection and claims were not based on fact. Or he would have submitted an affidavit pursuant to 156 sub F that stated more discovery was needed. He did not do this. Now, I will very briefly touch on the kind of constitutional argument that Epic made in its brief. I think it's important to note that strict scrutiny, which is the standard that he is seeking, that Epic is seeking to have brought forward, is inappropriate. The appropriate standard, as Mr. Sabers just stated, is the South Dakota's version of the rational basis standard, which requires that the ordinance bear a real and substantial relation to the object sought to be attained. Again, with regard to constitutionality, it is Epic's burden to demonstrate that it is unmistakably unconstitutional, and they have not. For these reasons, we request that the court sustain the circuit court's grant of summary judgment in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carpenter, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. Following up on Mr. Sabers, turning 50, and he's still nervous when he argues. Well, I'm turning 80 in a couple months, and I'm still nervous when I come before the Supreme Court. I think the case is really fairly simple. Judge Wickrey, in applying long-established South Dakota law, pointed out in her opinion that the resisting party cannot overcome a motion for summary judgment with mere allegations and denials. And citing Fortier versus City of Spearfish, the party challenging the ordinance must show the facts supporting the claim that the ordinance is unconstitutional. Epic both failed to set forth specific facts that there is a genuine issue for trial, as required by 15656E, and to present facts supporting the claims that Ordinance 3813, which was enacted in 2002 and under which Epic operated for 9 years without complaint, was unconstitutional. Those findings under established South Dakota law are dispositive, and it should be the end of the story. They didn't show material facts. They didn't show any facts challenging the constitutionality of the ordinance. Epic, however, they spend pages and pages in their briefs urging this court to ignore the requirements of South Dakota statute and case law and place upon the city the burden of going forward with the evidence. The court is being told that it must scrutinize the ordinance even without facts being introduced to rebut or at least place in issue the presumption of validity. Statements such as the following statement at page 5 of Epic's brief that, quote, there's nothing in the record as to how, and then it says, or even whether, the city actually supported its findings. That's an obligation to come forward with something, and it recognizes that they may have. Our case law doesn't say that the court is supposed to look for issues or place itself in the position of the city. The opposite is true. It's critically important in analyzing this appeal to keep in mind in this litigation involved two separate sets of sign ordinances. Now, Mr. Sabers, when he started, he said that this ordinance 3813 spawned this long line of litigation. That's simply an inaccurate statement. There was no challenge to ordinance 2002. There were no cases until the city's initiated ordinance in 2011. The 2002 ordinance 3813, which is before this court, was not challenged. The 2011 initiated ordinance, which are no longer before this court, that were conceded to be moot, I guess, in the summary judgment hearing before Judge Wickery at page 19 to 20, counsel for Lamar says, for Epic says, the reason I attached the brief, and they're talking about that 75-page brief that Lamar submitted in a totally different case that involved only those issues that are not before this court. I thought it was so important that a lot of our briefs simply changed words and made the same arguments. Epics refuses to recognize and ask this court to ignore the fact that the federal suit involved only the initiated ordinances and that it failed to allege specific facts. Now, there are some statements about what's allegedly in their Mr. Casey's statement of facts or his affidavit. I would ask you to carefully look at that. You'll see there's no facts alleged in that. There's nothing that says there's all general, mere allegations and generalities, and thus the case should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sabers, you can proceed with rebuttal.
Sometimes I feel like I'm being ganged up on this case. Anyway, a couple just points. The city of Rapid City has now acknowledged the same thing that we've represented in our appellant's brief. They didn't argue to the trial court that they had contemplated the statute 312969 before the trial court. It's undisputed. So now we also have the fact that the sign credits, the focus of this case is specifically sign credits and whether the enactment of a currency is consistent with the parameters provided by the legislature in 312969. And so if you look at the oral argument, and honestly I wasn't going to bring this up, but based on the city's argument I'm going to, look at the oral argument. In the last like four pages, you'll find that there is research going on phones. Like we're Googling sign credits at the summary judgment hearing, or at least the city is. And so that's summary judgment. Summary judgment is not supposed to be doing research at the hearing when you haven't argued that any other jurisdiction has enacted sign credits or that they've been upheld anywhere else in the country. The Adams case, as I recall, and I am comfortable enough to represent it to the court, I don't believe the Adams case was cited to the trial court because I think it was cited for the first time on appeal. And so as to Lamar, Lamar's case that was tried to the federal district court, and the reason why I thought it was important for the trial court and for this court to understand it is because two things. It addresses ordinances and deference, and it addresses the issue of the constitutionality of it. The case that we haven't talked about yet is the Metro Media case. And although I think, honestly, that case is above my pay grade because it's about 50 pages from the United States Supreme Court with four different dissents, and I've read it many times. But what I think it boils down to is what they say is there has to be a level of review because when you get into either a prohibition or you get into aesthetics, it can't just be words on a page. It is deference, but there has to be a relationship. And that's why I think in this case it ties back to this. Summary judgment was granted. We had raised affidavit. We had pointed out that the legislature had provided the framework. They had provided what I called home plate. Rapid City had 72 opportunities in their ordinances. I've never seen anything, having now practiced, I suppose, 23 years, where they recite 72 separate reasons for an ordinance, but the business community or the business community's right to advertise is not referenced anywhere in those. I get it. The legislature doesn't dislike billboards nearly as much of the city as the city of Rapid City did at the time it enacted these ordinances. I mean, this is kind of Rapid City's airing of the grievances. Billboards are ugly, billboards are this, billboards are that. In their ordinance, they cite the statutes on sidewalks and streets.
What if they hadn't done any of that? What if they hadn't said anything? They just enacted the... And you heard my question, Ms. Larson.
Yep.
What if they hadn't done that? Do they have to justify it prospectively like that? Or is it, as she suggests, your obligation to rebut this presumption that it's an otherwise reasonable act of the city exercising its police power and its authority to, you know, legislate?
I think it's a very interesting question. We know they did. In this case, they took the opportunity to have 72 different reasons for the ordinance.
So what is it that you think that they should have done? If they had just said in one of their findings, we considered the statute 69, is that enough? Or do you expect that they have to have outlined their analysis and application of statute 69?
I think it's a different question for the court, Justice, that if they had provided no basis. But when they choose to provide a detailed basis that doesn't address what the legislature, if you take 72 reasons, but none of those reasons say,
okay, so assume for hypothetical purposes that they had in one of their whereas statements said we have considered 69.
I don't think it, well, and then I think it's this court's obligation to conduct the analysis and shown Wald, wherein this court would have to say, is that stated regulation, sign credits specifically, a currency of sign credits, is that consistent? Is it reasonably related to the needs of, are sign credits reasonably related to the needs of the business community to adequately and properly advertise to the traveling public? And is that a real and substantial measure that hits the object the legislature told them? This court would still need to conduct the review, but I understand it's deferential. What you have here is 72 reasons, none of which address it. I see my time has expired. I do very much appreciate the opportunity anytime I get it to argue before this court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. Case is submitted. We'll be in recess here for about 5 minutes before we have a take up a rules hearing.